This is a big year. The Ohio Lottery's golden anniversary. 50 years of excitement, of growing jackpots and crossed fingers. 50 years of funding for schools, of changed lives and brightened days. 50 years of fun, and that is worth celebrating. So watch for can't-miss promotions, huge events, and new games that will make the Ohio Lottery's 50th year its biggest one yet. Learn more at funturns50.com.
Want to connect with a family member who doesn't speak your language? Then check out the language learning program Rosetta Stone on desktop or as an app. Rosetta Stone is designed to immerse you in the language you're learning through an intuitive process. Plus, the True Accent feature even gives you feedback on your pronunciation. And with a lifetime membership, you have access to all 25 offered languages. Get started today. Visit rosettastone.com/pod50 to get 50% off your lifetime membership now. That's rosettastone.com/pod50 for 50% off.
Welcome to True Crime Garage. Wherever you are, whatever you are doing, thanks for listening. I'm your host, Nick, and with me, as always, is a man who's been working double time on the seduction line. He is the captain.
Thank you. It's good to be seen, and it's good to see you. Thanks for listening. Thanks for telling a friend.
Today in the garage, we are sipping on a wonderful Pilsner by the Freedom Family Brewers. The first thing you will notice about Freedom Pilsner is the brilliant gold color, and the ABV is just right at 4.9%. And Freedom is spelled P-F-R-I-E-M if you are looking for this one in stores or online. Garage grade, 4 out of 5 bottle caps. And today's beer was brought to us by all of you wonderful listeners. And we have a couple of shout-outs. First, we go to Andrea in Stevens Point, Wisconsin.
And a big shout out to Jamie in Aledo, Texas.
Next up, a big shout out and cheers to Katie and Tim in Oronaco, Minnesota.
And a big shout out to David B. in Parts Unknown.
And here's a beach cheers to Angela in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. And last but certainly not least, we have Holly, who sends along some case suggestions. And I think Holly is in Warwick, Rhodes Island. If not, thank you to Holly, wherever she may be, and thank you to everyone for filling up the fridge for today's show. If you want to help us out with next week's show, go to truecrimegarage.com and click on the donate button.
For all of our old episodes, check us out exclusively on the Stitcher app, and also check out our weekly show Off the Record on Stitcher Premium. And that is enough of the business.
All right, everybody, gather around, grab a chair, grab a beer. Let's talk some true crime.
Called 59-year-old John D. Miller in for questioning, they asked if he knew why they wanted to talk with them. According to a probable cause affidavit, he replied, April Tinsley. It's Fort Wayne's most notorious cold case. April 1st, 1988 is the last time anyone saw the 8-year-old girl alive. Police canvassed her neighborhood after April's mother, Janet Tinsley, reported her missing. 3 days later, April 4th, her body was found in a ditch near County Road 68. She was molested, suffocated. Her death ruled a homicide. A forensic exam of her underwear revealed DNA from an unknown male, but it wasn't until 30 years later that police were able to find a match. DNA from condoms found in 2014 matched the DNA in Tinsley's underwear, and in 2018, the suspect's DNA was narrowed down to two surviving brothers. John D. Miller was one of them. Police collected several items from Miller's trash can located near his trailer in the 13,000 block of Main Street in Grable, including three used condoms. And 3 days later, July 9, 2018, authorities learned the DNA from those condoms was consistent with that of the DNA found in Tinsley's underwear in 1988. According to a probable cause affidavit, detectives told Miller they had a DNA match in the rape and murder of Tinsley. That's when Miller admitted to abducting Tinsley from Hoagland Street in Fort Wayne, taking her to his trailer and having sex with her. He reportedly told police he choked her to death so that she would not report him to the police. Then he dumped her body the next day.
That was just 1 year ago when in July of 2018, and thank God for the arrest made in the 30-year-old cold case of April Tinsley. That clip you heard is from CBS News. Now, we covered April's case a while ago back in December of 2015, True Crime Garage episode number 7. With this arrest, Captain, came the speculation that John Miller could also be linked to the Delphi murders. Miller was later convicted of the murder of 8-year-old April Tinsley and sentenced to 80 years in prison. When asked if Miller was a possible suspect, Indiana State Police Sergeant Kim Riley would not give a detailed statement, saying only, quote, "We have 1,000 names out there and we are still looking at all of them." And he added he was being intentionally vague with that statement. In the following month, this is August 2018, in an interview with the Gazette, a man that we spoke at length about in yesterday's episode, Daniel Nations, the man arrested in Colorado and believed to have some connection, possible connection to the Delphi murders. As we know, he was from Indiana and wanted by the state of Indiana. In this interview, he denies any involvement in the Delphi murders, stating that he gave his DNA samples to Indiana authorities and said, quote, "I just want people to know the truth that I am not a monster." Nations was sentenced in relation to the threatening charges that he faced in Colorado and eventually sentenced in Indiana on unrelated charges for failing to register as a sex offender. So his statement, Daniel Nations, is that he gave DNA samples to Indiana authorities. Again, does not mean that they have DNA or do not have DNA. And also, I'm not asking anybody out there to believe this sex offender who refuses to check in and is also guilty of swinging a hatchet at people on the trails out in Colorado. That's just his words.
All right, continuing on the timeline, we're going to get another suspect on November 19th, 2018.
This is when a man entered a Catholic supply store in a strip mall in St. Louis County, Missouri. The man was armed, and he ordered women in the store at gunpoint into the back room. Once there, he ordered them to strip, and he sexually assaulted two women before shooting another woman in the head. 53-year-old Jamie Schmidt later died after being transported to the hospital. The man left the store. One of the victims called 911. This call came in at 3:19 p.m. Responding officers found no evidence at the crime scene to help them identify this suspect. Witness descriptions to police detailed the perpetrator as a white male, about 5'7" tall, with a heavy build and aged between 40 and 50 years of age. The description was updated by police the next day that the perpetrator was 5 feet 7 inches tall to 5 feet 9 inches tall, wearing a paper boy style hat, a navy blue Carhartt style jacket, and a red, white, and black plaid shirt and blue jeans. Officers interviewed workers at neighboring businesses, and a server at the Hot Shots Sports Bar recognized the description of the suspect as matching that of a man who recently left his business card at the business. Police sifted through the trash, found the card, and immediately went to his home and arrested Thomas Bruce. This manhunt lasted just under 2 days. This put Thomas Bruce in the spotlight of the press. Some noted his similar stature of 5 foot 7 to 5 foot 9 inches to the then current suspect description in the Delphi slangs. Also, he was wearing a flat cap, which many suspect the bridge guy is wearing a flat cap. He was wearing a navy blue jacket and blue jeans, and his sexual murder attack, which he did in broad daylight, not unlike the suspect in the Delphi case. Indiana State Police did look into this possible connection. On December 4th, 53-year-old Thomas Bruce was charged with no less than 17 felony counts related to the St. Louis case and could face the death penalty. He was later charged in an unrelated case, this resulting from a case from September 2018 that involved kidnapping, sexual assault, and robbery. Now, what I find fascinating about this scenario here, Captain, this Thomas Bruce, who's obviously a complete monster, but there are some similarities. I'm not going to say that he looks like the bridge guy. I'm not going to say that he looks unlike the bridge guy. But what really jumps off of the
page,
what
are you trying to say?
Immediately is that he seems to be wearing a similar outfit to the bridge guy. And the outfit is much easier to see in that grainy photo than the face of the man. So if, in fact, the bridge guy is wearing a cap, this would have been a similar style hat. He's also wearing a navy blue jacket when he commits this crime and blue jeans. And again, this is a crime that he didn't mind going into this place in the middle of broad daylight, in the middle of the afternoon, and committing this horrible attack that ends, the end result is a murder. We've got no update as far as Thomas Bruce goes, if there's been anything more to connect him to the Delphi case other than just public speculation. On January 8th, 2019, Charles Andrew Eldridge, one ugly bastard, age 46, was arrested after allegedly arranging to meet for sex with a police officer who was posing as a teenage girl. He faces multiple charges, including two counts of child molestation. During the course of news coverage of his arrest, local Indiana residents noticed his mugshot and said it resembles the sketch of Abby and Libby's alleged killer. And these calls made their way very quickly to the police tip line. After receiving multiple calls, the Indiana State Police made the following statement. Quote, "I can promise you this. When an arrest is made of a suspect identified as the alleged perpetrator of the Delphi murders, rest assured, we will let everyone know. It is important for the public and the media to know that many similar tips and arrests of other persons alleged to be connected to the Delphi murders occur with some frequency in and outside of Indiana. Each tip, whether it receives media attention or not, is investigated for any connection to the Delphi case," end quote. Calling Mr. Eldridge an ugly bastard is being very kind to him.
He's fugly.
Yes, yes, he's fugly not only in looks, but personality and character. This is a bad guy. This is a disgusting person. And we talked about him on Off the Record. I can see some resemblance a little bit again, but you're questioning what you think that you're seeing in the picture of the bridge guy.
Right. It's so difficult with him.
The bridge guy is, to me, at least in facial appearance, not as fugly as Eldridge.
Mm.
He appeared to me, the bridge guy appears younger than Eldridge and probably thinner and smaller. Eldridge, I don't know if it's just that he's so ugly, but he, like, when you see pictures of him, he presents like an opposing stature, like an opposing figure. It's just, there's something very evil about that man when
you know
I see
that
pictures
face,
of him.
You know that face you make when you eat a Sour Patch Kid?
Mm.
It's like, that's the kind of face you make when you see his picture.
Yeah.
Like,
it's scary. It's scary. Just 2 days after this, the Indiana State Police say that there is no evidence thus far to suggest that Eldridge has any connection to the Delphi case. In a news release, Randolph County Police said, quote, outside of the person resembling the sketch, there is currently zero evidence that ties him to this case.
Right.
And he is not a suspect in the case. Although we understand that people are trying to help the investigation by doing this with zero evidence other than a mere appearance, it can also hurt or hinder an investigation, the department said. In a more recent report, Captain Dave Burston says there is no evidence suggesting or disproving whether Eldridge is connected to the case.
And this was a similar thing where right when this news broke, it was like Facebook went nuts. And now it's like the case is solved. Even though then it's just, you know, waiting around for the next person that somebody's going to go, well, this must be it. So law enforcement's getting a lot of tips from armchair detectives, a lot of tips from the community.
But you know what I think is interesting there, Captain, what you were getting into, and you're exactly right, is several times throughout this investigation, and I think that's where the community stands and where the state of Indiana stands, and I would venture to say that the nation as well, that this is such a big story, such a big case, something that is on a lot of people's minds and hurts everyone's hearts,
right,
that they want this case solved. And so there is a bit of a freak out period when a new person is brought to light as a potential suspect, as potential bridge guy. There is that little freak out period that goes on. Now, what I will say, where I will pat everyone on the back for in the general public, mm-hmm. is that I think that freak out period was tempered a bit from the first time we saw that happen. When Daniel Nations was arrested in Colorado, the hype and the freak out and the everybody going crazy on the message boards and on social media was so crazy that actually really messed up the investigation and messed things up for the families and the living victims of this crime and murders, because they were stuck
right.
for a while walking around going, shit, people think this has been solved.
Yeah. We got to get the word out that it hasn't been solved.
Yeah, there were a lot of people in the general public that were walking around thinking after Daniel Nations was arrested that this case has been solved, when in fact, no, it has not. And so that's where I give some kudos, because I think
we learned a lesson.
Yeah. We've learned, and now we've able to contain that excitement a little bit. That's how bad everybody wants to see an arrest in this case. But we're able to contain that excitement to the point where we're not freaking out and people thinking that the case is closed. Again, Indiana State Police have said very clearly, mm-hmm. when there's an arrest made in the Delphi murders case, we will tell everybody.
We'll let you know.
Yeah. So this brings us to the 2-year anniversary of the disappearance. So February 13th, 2019, just earlier this year, 2-year anniversary of Libby and Abby's disappearance, authorities vowed that they would bring the person responsible to justice, saying this is not a cold case. And I want to back that up. Everything that I can see, Captain, this thing appears to be very far from cold. The prosecutor, the Carroll County prosecutor, Nicholas McLeland, told reporters, this case is not closed. We are not done with this investigation. There are countless people working on this every day. And Captain, remember when the public was reminded several times about what the state police are looking for.
Mm-hmm.
Most people have seen the posters and the statements by Indiana State Police that say, what is a good tip? So what are they looking for? And anyone who comes forward with information is asked to include the following, if possible. So if you're going to submit a tip, they're hoping that they can get from you your suspect's name, the date of birth or approximate age, a physical description, possibly their address and or vehicle information, a specific reason why you believe this person should be considered a suspect, a possible motive, and any possible connection that that person may have to the Delphi community.
But this is not going to be the last person that people get excited about. There's going to be a murder that takes place, an arrest that's made pretty quickly, and this is another one that people are going to start looking into and trying to build the connection.
Yes, and I feel like there currently are probably two individuals that a lot of people are focusing on right now, and we're going to get into both of them. This brings us to Saturday, March 30th, 2019. And this is when a body is found just about 6 miles northwest of Kentland in Newton County, Indiana, which is northwest of Carroll County, and Delphi, the city of Delphi, is in Carroll County. So not terribly far away. And the way that this case works out is the property owner finds a body wrapped in a gray blanket on a wooden floor of a shipping type container. So some people are familiar with this. This was actually used as some type of hunting shack, or has been referred to at least in the newspapers as a hunting shack.
Right.
But sometimes people will take these storage shipping type containers that you would see on a, I don't know, on a barge or on a train or something like that.
Right.
And use them as a makeshift building.
Yeah, sometimes people turn these into houses.
And people that live in the city and have never lived in the country may not understand this, but there are a lot of people, especially hunters, that own property that they may not even live on. That they own this property, it's out in BFE somewhere, and once in a while when they can break away from work, they go out there and they enjoy hunting and fishing and things like that. Well, this property, the property owner goes out to this, what's being referred to as a hunting shack, and finds this body wrapped in this gray blanket and reports the body. This is around 2:38 p.m. on March 30th. This whole case has really inspired a lot of thought and speculation regarding if it, in fact, could be connected to Delphi. And I think for several reasons. One, given the proximity to the city of Delphi. And two, the headlines are woman found tortured in a hunting shack or in a shed. Some of the headlines say shed. So I think where we see the outdoor type murder, there's another belief and there's another connection. And
yeah.
This may sound, I'm sure it doesn't sound silly to anyone, but as we go through these, the more that we bring up, it might seem a little strange that there's just one after another after another. You got to keep in mind that
this is just proof that you shouldn't move to Indiana.
We are doing Indiana no favors in this episode. That's for sure.
This episode, these last two episodes, have not been sponsored by Indiana.
We're in Ohio, so we're not too terribly far. But here's the general thought. The bridge guy, the killer of two young girls out in broad daylight, has to be such an evil individual. Many suspect that either this is not the first time that he's killed, or if it was, it wouldn't be the last. And that's why when we see this time and time again of something happening, of another case happening elsewhere, somewhat close, if it has any ties at all, if it has any possible similarities, that people are making the jump and they want to know more about that case, the new case, because they want to know if, in fact, the monster that committed those crimes could be the same monster as the guy on the bridge that day. This story is very odd, and it's actually a pretty simple story. When you first hear the headlines, tortured woman's body found in a shed or in a hunting shack, your imagination runs wild. And when you really start to see and understand the facts of the case as we currently understand them weeks later, you see that a connection is a little rough, but there are some interesting things that if you're fine with it, Captain, we'll get into after I go through what is believed took place in this actual case.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so unfortunately, the victim here was eventually identified as Nicole L. Bowen. She is a mother of two. She's 30 years old from West Lafayette. And of course, foul play was immediately suspected. What ends up taking place here? And I don't know exactly where the fingerprints were found, but they find fingerprints either on the body or items used to discard the body or in that shed or hunting shack.
Mm-hmm.
They find fingerprints that are going to lead them to a suspect. Okay. So it wasn't very tough for them to find out who they wanted to talk to immediately. Who they end up talking to, the owner of the fingerprints, is Garrett Kurtz. He is 21 years old of Lebanon, Indiana. It takes some time, but there is an arrest that's made. In fact, there are five arrests that are made in this case. Okay. So we have Garrett Kurtz, who we're going to spend the most time talking about. But we also have Ashley Garth, who is 26 years old. She is from Delphi, Indiana. We have Christopher Mathias, 27 years old of Kentland. Jasmine Parker, 34 of Kentland. And Talitha Beckley. Apologize for that, Captain, but it looks like Talitha.
Don't apologize. It's a shitty name.
36 years old of Monticello. So why are so many people arrested in this case? Kurtz, once arrested, he's going to do some talking, and I'm sure these others did talking as well. Now, I'm a little uncertain of the location, but very early on in this case, the newspapers were reporting that police believed that Bowen was killed elsewhere, that she was probably very likely killed miles away, and that her body was dumped in or around the shed, right? So right there, we can see that the headline of woman found tortured in a shed is very different from what actually happened. She wasn't tortured in that shed. She wasn't held captive in that shed, abducted elsewhere and brought there. What took place was her body was just attempted to be concealed there. The way this went down is Nicole Bowen has a connection to Garrett Kurtz. It sounds like they may have even had a relationship at one time. There was some kind of beef between Nicole Bowen and this Ashley Garth. I don't know where this was to take place, but the way that this went down was there was supposed to be some type of meeting between Bowen and Garth. What we can't confirm is if Bowen was going along with this or not, if she was into this meeting or if she was brought there against her will.
Right.
What we do know is she arrives at a trailer. Garrett Kurtz brought her to this trailer. I've heard a couple different news reports. One stating that the trailer was owned by Garrett Kurtz. The other saying that it was owned by Ashley Garth. I can't say who out of this batch of losers owned the trailer. But anyway, Nicole Bowen is brought there. She does not want to go into the trailer. At some point, there is an altercation, a physical fight that starts to take place between her and Ashley Garth. Again, it's my understanding that Nicole Bowen was a one-time girlfriend, possibly, of Kurtz, and that Ashley Garth was the current girlfriend of Garrett Kurtz. There's some kind of physical altercation. A fight breaks out between the two. It also sounds like it was expected or suspected by others there that this fight would likely take place if the two saw each other face to face.
So these women are going to fight over this piece of shit.
I can't say that for certain. I've seen pictures of this dude and there's videos of this dude online, and I don't know why ants would fight over this guy.
He's fugly as well.
Here's my guess. And I don't know that it's been publicly stated, but I'm going to go off of mugshot photos and what I strongly suspect is happening here. I think that all of these individuals that we've named are involved in drugs, very likely in meth. And this dispute could have been over this man, if you want to call him that, or it could have been over something else. But we do know there was some kind of beef between Bowen and Garth.
This is a big year. The Ohio Lottery's golden anniversary. 50 years of excitement, of growing jackpots and crossed fingers. 50 years of funding for schools, of changed lives and brightened days. 50 years of fun, and that is worth celebrating. So watch for can't-miss promotions, huge events, and new games that will make the Ohio Lottery's 50th year its biggest one yet. Learn more at funturns50.com.
Want to connect with a family member who doesn't speak your language? Then check out the language learning program Rosetta Stone on desktop or as an app. Rosetta Stone is designed to immerse you in the language you're learning through an intuitive process. Plus, the True Accent feature even gives you feedback on your pronunciation. And with a lifetime membership, you have access to all 25 offered languages. Get started today. Visit rosettastone.com/pod50 to get 50% off your lifetime membership now. That's rosettastone.com/pod50 for 50% off.
I was shocked, you know? They were always such a good team, so successful. But to do something like that, to exceed their budget?
While being over budget might not be a crime, it can disrupt workflows. With Monday.com, you and the team can be sure that you're all in sync. All the data, latest updates, files, and budgets are visible to everyone, so you won't miss a thing. Tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
All right, we're back. Cheers, me mateys.
Cheers, Captain. Regarding this,
are you gonna start patting us on the backside again?
Patting you on the back?
Backside, whichever.
I didn't say backside. regarding this fight, so where we left off, we have Nicole Bowen and Ashley Garth are in the middle of a fight, a physical fight, to which, according to the prosecutor in this case, Garrett Kurtz jumps in the middle of this fight. And how he gets involved in this is he puts Nicole Bowen in a headlock, wraps his arm around her neck. He tightens his arm until she goes unconscious, till he puts her on the floor. According to the information I could find, it appears that he did not want her to wake up, but he didn't just keep choking her. He started going throughout the trailer and finding implements to help him choke, strangle, suffocate her to lead to her death.
All right, so there was a fight going on. He jumps in the middle. He puts her in some kind of chokehold. She then passes out, and then he's now going around finding objects to help him choke her with?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, so at one point he uses an extension cord. At one point he uses a bag over her head. ropes and so on and so forth were used in this manner. That's why when her body is found, they're saying that it appears that she has been tortured. Meanwhile, all these other disgraces that are standing around in the trailer, they do not stop Kurtz from killing this woman. Now, at the trailer itself, it's just Kurtz and these other women that we mentioned. And again, those names are Jasmine Parker, Talitha Beckley, as well as his girlfriend, Ashley Garth. So what occurs after Bowen is killed is Kurtz gets his vehicle. He backs it up to the trailer. He places her body inside his vehicle. And now he's going to call Christopher Mathias, his 27-year-old buddy of Kentland, Indiana, and say, "Hey, I got a body here. Can you help me?" And Christopher Mathias will very quickly agree to help Mr. Kurtz dispose of this body. They drove around until they found what they thought to be the perfect place to dump Miss Bowen's body. And as we know, the body is eventually found. All five of these terrible people are eventually arrested, and now they're waiting to go to trial. Some of them have had their first day in court. It's going to be interesting to see who turns on who and how more complete this story can get, because the tricky thing here is it sounds like a lot of this information, whether it be verified by the others or not, is in fact being provided by Kurtz. The one good thing out of this whole terrible story is that Kurtz is a monster as well as these other four, and they are no longer on the street. They are locked up and currently behind bars. Here's where we end up with a lot of problems. We've already talked about where the headlines lead the public and people to speculate that this Kurtz individual could be possibly connected to the Delphi double slaying. There is also some consensus that maybe he resembles the bridge guy in some form. There is also people that, well, this is actually going to stem from the next thing on our timeline, which I think we should get into real quick, and we'll circle back to Garrett Kurtz.
Yeah, because what happens next, it really changed almost everything that we thought we knew about this case.
Yeah, on April 22nd, the Indiana State Police release new audio, new video, and a new sketch of the suspect as they announce a new direction at a press conference. So never before released video taken from Libby's cell phone shows a man walking toward the two girls. That's released. Authorities also release more phone audio of a man saying "guys." Mm-hmm. So now we have, before we had "down the hill," now we have "guys down the hill." They also release a new younger looking sketch of the suspect who they believe has ties to the Delphi area. Authorities say he is between 18 and 40 years old. This was a, to say the least, Captain, so, this was a very powerful press conference.
Yeah. On top of that, we have this, like we said, this new drawing, which goes, wow, this perpetrator might've been way younger than we thought he was.
The new drawing, too, looks nothing like the old drawing.
Right.
So.
Yeah. And so if you thought Daniel Nations looked like the first drawing, well, he doesn't look anything like the second drawing. Anybody that was arrested, like we said, people fishing for answers and going, "Hey, he kind of looks like the drawing." Well, now we have a whole new drawing. So that just kind of, it changes the whole game.
Yeah, so as far as Garrett Kurtz is concerned, and like I said, he's one of the big names right now that people are suspicious of. There is audio, there's a video of him online where he's saying the word "guys." He's saying something
"guys."
Like, "I got a vent here for a little bit, guys." And it doesn't sound unlike what is released from the police.
Yeah, it's a very hard G.
Yeah.
Which, when you hear it, "guys down the hill" or "down the hill, guys," it's a very, like, it's almost like a weird accent. And then you hear the comparison audio and you go, that I see where they're saying they're similar.
The only issue that I have with that is you could not talk about a smaller sample size for
right.
comparison purposes.
Yes.
It's one single word where you're taking that from Garrett Kurtz when he appears to be high or drunk or both, smoking mm-hmm. a cigarette. And he when he says guys, it almost looks to me like he's inhaling as he says the word guys. So I don't know that that's his natural speak, but I mm-hmm. guess we also can't say that the bridge guy was talking normally as well during that whole situation.
Right. So a lot of people find that similar. I think that the big thing was that his ex-girlfriend was from Delphi. So that would put a connection between him and the actual location.
Regardless of where she's from or where she was living, he doesn't live terribly far from Delphi.
Right.
So I put more thought into that than where his girlfriend's from. There's a lot of people from Delphi. Mm-hmm. I think that's why it jumps off the page to people immediately when they're reading the newspaper article going, this guy and these people did this horrible thing. Wait, there's the word Delphi in there.
Well, the funny thing is when you first see him, he has a shaved head and he kind of looks somewhat like maybe the first sketch. But then if you do some digging into his background, he actually had longer curly hair, which not long curly hair, but a little bit, not like buzz cut. His hair now is buzz cut. A couple years back when the murders took place, at that time, if you look into his Facebook pictures and stuff like that, he has these curly reddish blonde hair, which is basically what they're saying with the new drawing.
Yeah, it's weird because I could see where 2 years ago he may have looked like the old drawing and today he looks like, wait, I'm said that wrong.
Reverse
I could
it.
Yes, I could see where 2 years ago when Kurtz was 19, now keep in mind that would fit within their age range of 18 to 40. Now,
right.
mind you, that's a very large age range, but Kurtz was 19. I could see possibly him looking like the new sketch. And now, after 2 years of hard drugs and hard living,
well,
he looks like the old sketch.
Well, and think about what the FBI tells you all the time when they're looking for somebody. Look for somebody that is making changes in their appearance. So when you have evidence on somebody's Facebook page that they had a haircut similar to the new drawing, and now when you see them 2 years later, they have a buzz cut. Well, that's not that big of a deal. You got two years that they could have changed their haircut. But based off of what people have been searching on the internet, it seems like he changed his haircut and his style roughly around the time of the Delphi murders.
The other thing there's a few more things about this Kurtz guy that are kind of freaking people out. One, he has a friend that people have found pictures of on his Facebook page that resembles the new sketch. So people question that. Also, Garrett Kurtz seems to have some, not just a tie to Delphi because his girlfriend is from there. There's speculation that he may have worked on Ron Logan's property or have some kind of involvement. There's people that have done some good detective work where they've took pictures from interviews with Ron Logan around the time of the murders that showed his horses in the background or him standing next to a horse and petting the horse. People have found photos on Garrett Kurtz's Facebook page from years ago where these horses appear to be very similar, if not in fact the same horses. Now, these pictures appear in September of 2016. I'm not certain if that's a timestamp or if that's when they were posted to his Facebook. But that's an interesting thing there as well. Before we move on to Garrett Kurtz, I also want to throw this out there, and this is yet to be confirmed, but I imagine we should know this fairly soon.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of speculation. Now, Garrett Kurtz is not a saint. He's a terrible individual. It sounds like maybe he has admitted to killing Nicole Bowen, but even that one day aside, right? Let's remove that completely from his life. He's still not a saint. He's somebody that very obviously has some kind of drug problem. He has been arrested before, and that's where the speculation comes in that people are wondering if possibly he was in jail at the time of the murders. So I know that that is being looked into. I don't see why that would take very long to find out that information. But he's a relatively new suspect on this list.
Well, and a lot of people talk about the press conference as well. There's this statement that the sergeant is making, and he's talking, and kind of randomly he pulls a captain, right? He randomly gets off subject and starts talking about this movie about some cabin.
Well, I regarding this press conference and the new sketch, we could do two more shows on that. And I don't have the information right here in front of me, but are we convinced that he says the cabin and doesn't say the shack or the shack?
Yeah, he might have said the shack. But I guess there's some movie where...
But there's an issue with that because there's a movie called The Cabin, there's a movie called The Shack.
Mm-hmm.
And they're two very different movies, two completely different stories. So if you look at something like The Cabin, it's more of a horror flick, where The Shack is more of a kind of a grieving film, more of a drama. So without having that directly in front of me, I don't know how much I want to talk about that, because those are two regarding... Depending on what he says, it's two completely different thoughts that you could put into that possible statement.
Right. I just want to say that there's a lot of people online saying there's this statement that we actually covered this press conference. Like, I think we actually watched it and then recorded off the record about the press conference. And I believe at the time we actually mentioned, well, that's strange. That it was kind of a strange comment. And so because it's been strange and it kind of stuck out to people, once you got this guy arrested and they find the victim in a shack or slash cabin or whatever you want to call it, that's where they start putting the connection with this new suspect.
Right. So real quick here, my general understanding, and again, I don't have the transcript of what was said at that press conference,
right,
to know if he said shack or cabin. But from my understanding, the story, The Cabin, is more of a horror flick, and it involves murder and torture and things of that nature.
Right.
Where the film, The Shack, is more about grieving and coming to an acceptance of loss.
Yes.
So
I think you're correct.
So both of them could play, both of them work into that.
Yes.
Into his press conference in a way, meaning, you know, look, because you can see the hurt on the eyes and in the eyes and on the faces of the investigators at some of these press conferences. Now, Kurtz is somebody that is of concern, of interest here. One thing I question is his ability to get away with something.
His willingness to confess as well.
Willingness to confess, if in fact he did confess, somebody did. I'm assuming it came from him. But also, very quickly asking for help in disposing of the body. There's just a lot of mistakes very quickly made. We don't know what mistakes the bridge guy made. But Kurtz is not the last person that would become a suspect in the public's eyes, because just last month, June 22nd, at approximately 4:30 in the morning, a 26-year-old woman is driving and she's having some car troubles. She pulls over to the side of the road.
Mm-hmm.
This puts her on the property of 55-year-old Paul Etter. Paul offers to help this woman. She gets a bad feeling and says she doesn't need any help. Now, despite the issues she is having with the vehicle, she drives off anyway. Paul Etter decides to follow this woman.
That's not creepy.
I'm not certain how he caught up with her or if, in fact, her car finally gave out.
Right.
But eventually, Paul Etter abducts the woman and takes her to his family's farm, where he holds her there for hours and sexually assaults the woman. Mm. After several hours, he lets her go. She reports the abduction and rape, and now local law enforcement is looking for this Paul Etter. Somehow, he manages to evade police for almost 5 full days. This is until police spot a stolen vehicle. A vehicle that was reported stolen.
Right.
Now, driving this stolen vehicle is Paul Etter. This leads to a 5-hour-long standoff with police, and the result, Paul Etter commits suicide.
Mm-hmm.
Paul Etter is just the latest in a slew of suspects in this case. Police are very interested to find out some things about this man. First off, they want to find out where he was when he was on the run from police. Was he staying with somebody? Did he drive or travel in another vehicle other than the stolen one that he was later located in?
Right.
Does he have any connection to the still unsolved Delphi murders?
Yeah, and he seems obviously older than the new sketch, but maybe it makes sense with the old sketch.
I just looked up the transcript real quick from the press conference that we were discussing. And in this version of the transcript, I can't verify that it's 100% accurate, but it says he references the shack.
Okay.
Yeah, he says, "We try so hard to understand how a person could do something like this to two children. I recently watched a movie called The Shack, and there's also a book that talks so well about evil, about death, and about eternity."
So it might have nothing... Sounds like it has nothing to do with the actual murder,
torture or anything.
It has more to do with the fact that he's grieving, the family's grieving, the community's grieving, and hey, this might be this sounds like something that possibly helped this law enforcement officer.
Yeah, I read a brief description on the book shortly after that press conference, and the way that it's described, the details of the book say that. Somebody that is grieving over the loss of somebody goes to this shack, and at the shack or near the shack, they have the ability to speak with Jesus, with God, and with the Holy Spirit. And I think it's through that this individual in the story is able to accept the loss of their loved one.
Yeah, and these are just the... I mean, there's a list, a big list that you put out, and each one having some connections with the actual case. Some, it seems like law enforcement, not 100% clearing, but at least trying to get some light to not be shine so brightly on certain suspects. But I wonder how many others are out there that have flown under the radar.
Well, it seems to me like law enforcement's willing to say just enough to try to get the press off their back about a certain individual. Not so much to say that they've cleared this individual. I think that they are perfectly happy with continuing under the statement that they've always said everyone is a suspect. And I think they're fine with letting that just be for now.
Mm-hmm.
So in July of this year, just earlier this month, July 9th, Libby's sister, Kelsey, took to YouTube this to debunk conspiracy surrounding the unsolved killings. Kelsey first began this post with a timeline of events the day that she dropped off Libby and Abby near the scenic Monon High Bridge. I want to say something here. I've seen people on YouTube and on different websites who question Kelsey, that say that she has changed her story a bazillion times, that the things that she says does not make sense. I think these people are fools. If they could point out something that would make sense to me, send it our way. We got a blog at truecrimegarage.com. Put something up there to make me see the light or understand this differently. I think Kelsey says it best.
And if you do, he'll pat you on the bottom.
Well, she said it best on her YouTube, where she says the whole week after the murders was a complete blur. So asking us to remember everything completely correct is so, I don't even think it's possible. I don't think anybody can remember something specific after something tragic like that happens. So keep in mind, this is a young woman who was even 2 years younger and lost her sister. Her sister was violently murdered after she dropped her off at this park.
Right.
So to call her anything other than a good big sister, I got no time for you, man.
Yeah, but to play devil's advocate.
Here we go.
You have to, it is not solved. We don't know everything. We don't know every detail. I think there's one thing to keep possibilities open. I think it's irresponsible when they take victims' family members and start throwing them under the bus with little to nothing there. But I don't think it's irresponsible to keep an open mind on certain ideas.
Okay. I don't understand what your point was.
Okay, so the point is that...
Well, calm down.
Your
point doesn't...
My point made perfect sense.
Did it?
It did. You just didn't understand it.
Okay, so what? I'm asking for clarification.
Right, so what I'm saying is, yes, I understand that you can be angry at somebody for throwing a victim's family member under the bus. I get that. But I don't think it's irresponsible to keep an open mind on we don't know the answers. We don't know every detail. So to question her, to think that there's a possibility that there might be details that are wrong coming from her or other family members, I don't think that's irresponsible. But I do think it's irresponsible when people then, take something because somebody changed their story here and there, and then all of a sudden try to point a guilty finger towards that person.
Well, Kelsey went on to stress that her family has been nothing but cooperative with the police investigation. Keep in mind, I'm really simplifying this and really shortening this a lot because this was a very long video. She's really just addressing the fact that there has been so many people that have stated that somebody in her family is guilty of this crime. And she's just pointing out that they've been nothing but cooperative, in her opinion, with the police investigation, saying, quote, absolutely no one has refused a lie detector test. That is a very big misconception. We've been very open and gave the police everything that we know. She spoke highly of her relatives, who have been smeared online, and noted that alibis and other proof, she said, showed they had nothing to do with the killings. She also shot down any rumblings that her family and investigators were not getting along. She then addressed a more specific rumor. This stems from when authorities said that Libby's phone pinged off two towers the day she disappeared. Armchair detectives theorized it must have been because the device was moving around town. But Kelsey said that was not the case. Libby's phone did ping on two towers, she said, but that was because the town is so small. If you move to one side of your house, your phone may switch towers sometimes.
Right. And I think this is tough for her family, too, because you have so many people that have been investing time and energy. I mean, we covered it early on, but we've talked about this case several times on Off the Record. But I agree with you on the idea that some of these individuals, they're not even looking into the idea that somebody might have an alibi, or they might have a bunch of evidence to point that they weren't involved at all. And these people online are then not even paying attention to that evidence and just running with their own theory because they had a gut feeling or they saw something and went, that guy gives me the heebie-jeebies, so therefore they're guilty.
Well, despite all of the suspects that we have mentioned on these last two shows, this case is far from being solved. The Indiana State Police are still asking for your help, the public's help. The FBI did release a list of behavioral clues that could help lead investigators to the killer or killers. The agency is asking the public to be on the lookout for anyone who has exhibited the following signs around the times of the murders. Changes to their daily routines, including modified sleep patterns, increased use of alcohol or drugs, cleaned or disposed of clothing and or shoes that might have been worn on February 13th, 2017, missed work or other engagements, anxiety, nervousness, or irritability, excessive attention to the investigation, media coverage, or lengthy discussions related to the murders. On Monday, February 13th, 2017, the individual or individuals responsible for these crimes may have been absent from work, missed or canceled an appointment or social engagements, or been unavailable or unresponsive during the afternoon period. The FBI explained this in their news release. They state they may have been a no-show or offered a plausible excuse for their absence or tardiness, such as illness, death in the family, car trouble, etc. If anyone has any information at all, or if you have a tip, police want those emailed to them. They have stated publicly several times this is how they would prefer to receive tips. And you can email any info to Abby and Libby Tip at cacoshrf.com. That's Abby and Libby Tip at cacoshrf.com. And of course, if you have information, but you believe that you are in danger, please call 911.
I want to thank everybody for listening and joining us in the garage. If you have thoughts on this case, please go to truecrimegarage.com and click on the blog. Do we have any recommended reading this week?
Yes, Captain. This week we are recommending Kentucky Bloodbath. This is by Wild Blue Press, which has really become one of the big publishers for true crime in the last 5 to 10 years. So anything from Wild Blue Press, I'm always excited about. This is by Kevin Sullivan, who we have recommended his books before. This is Kentucky Bloodbath, 10 Bizarre Tales of Murder from the Bluegrass State. And you can find that title along with other recommendations at truecrimegarage.com on the recommended page.
I want to thank everybody for sharing these cases on social media and helping to spread the word. We need more information. And until next week,
be good, be kind, and don't litter.
This is a big year. The Ohio Lottery's golden anniversary. 50 years of excitement, of growing jackpots and crossed fingers. 50 years of funding for schools, of changed lives and brightened days. 50 years of fun, and that is worth celebrating. So watch for can't-miss promotions, huge events, and new games that will make the Ohio Lottery's 50th year its biggest one yet. Learn more at funturns50.com.